We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RTÉ News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me in studio here today is Micheál Lehane, RTÉ's political correspondent. How are you, Micheál?
Good, good.
And also in a distant corridor, we're not being unfriendly, but those old health regulations demand that our political guest this week, Nasa Howrigan, the Dublin Central TD and Green Party member, is also joining with us, but by a distance. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I won't take it personally that I've been relegated to the other
thank
studio.
You. Exactly. We've just taken out all the cakes now that you've gone and buns.
Unfair.
And shocking. Before we actually kick off into the podcast, I just thought, wanted to get your view, Nasa, of Convention Centre Dublin. I saw you were speaking earlier on this morning from there, and it just struck me that if you are on your way down to the Convention Centre from Leinster House, you're passing by lots of small shops that are where people are serving sandwiches in small little galley kitchens and they're quite tight. And that's clearly abiding by public health advice. And yet you go down to Convention Centre Dublin, that massive air hangar where there seems to be hundreds of metres between each of the TDs. And I don't quite understand it.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't look great. And obviously, originally, the Conference Centre was taken on the basis that there would be 160 TDs able to gather there all the time. And now we have become even more socially distant because what the clerk has decided to do, or the Ceann Comhairle has decided to do, is try and limit that further. I think the limit is 49 or 50. And so it does feel cavernous. And it's definitely a different experience than somebody who, you know, through no fault of their own, is having to work in close quarters with a fellow co-worker. And I think the reality is that I spent half my life running back and forth up the quays. It is a much hated scenario for politicians, and I think there is questions to be asked around how fair it is then that we're expecting people to put up with different conditions, you know, in their own workplaces. And whatever about galley kitchens, you know, I have questions around things like meat plants, which I think maybe might be more pressing. But I think there is a feeling that we have to be seen to do the right thing, and that we should be the people setting the best example, and that's a pressure that the admin staff here and the Ceann Comhairle staff here, I think, feel. And I think that's how we found ourselves in this place. I do understand that they want to be seen to be doing it the most right way.
Yeah, I suppose setting a good example is one thing, but maybe the visual impact of it is that you're setting yourselves apart, and the way it might be perceived for people who are, as you say, working on buses or making sandwiches or whatever sort of like service industry that's still allowed to operate, is that it's one rule for TDs and one rule for everyone else.
Yeah, I think
it might be unfair, but I think that's a perception.
I don't know. Now that we've moved to the even lower numbers of less than 50, I think the fact that you can look around this huge area and this, you know, the huge conference centre, and it's hard sometimes to spot who's speaking or who the next person is. It does seem to be bordering on the faintly ridiculous now. But I think it's been a number of decisions and steps to get to this point. I cannot wait until we're back in Leinster House proper, because obviously I'm kind of a COVID politician at this stage, as I don't really even know what it's like to do the normal chamber thing where everybody is in close contact and roaring and shouting. That's a different country to me that I've never really experienced.
Well, maybe the vaccines might be able to give us the opportunity to all return to Leinster House and see some of those fireworks at close quarters. But just on that issue of vaccine, the debate today in the Dáil seemed to focus on that. The Minister for Health was in the chamber answering questions from TDs, and there seemed to be two things which were flowing from that. One was the issue of whether or not GPs are getting the correct service and ensuring that vaccines are being rolled out. Everyone accepts there's difficulties in getting delivery, but once it lands in the country, is that operating sufficiently? And the second issue was the minister himself talking about how from next week they will begin to vaccinate the cohort four. Now, that's the people with underlying conditions, which put them at a very high risk, and no doubt they will want to get the vaccine. I suppose the question is that we still have around 450,000 people in cohort three, those over 70, and they haven't got the vaccine yet at all.
Yeah, look, I think there is a number of issues with the rollout. We heard at the health committee this week that, you know, when we're in that last cohort where we're trying to kind of finish the entire population, that it won't be just GPs. The minister was pointing to, you know, pharmacists and dentists and a much larger group of people who would be empowered to vaccinate. And I think that as we deal with both the shortfall in supply from AstraZeneca, which we've seen this week has kind of held up some of the rollout, and the ongoing kind of discussions with the GPs and the IMO around that issue, I think it is difficult. I believe that in the Dáil today, the Tánaiste did state that the over 85s would be complete as a group this weekend. And I do know that those with underlying conditions, and particularly, you know, a cohort that I've been in contact with is people with chronic conditions that make them very susceptible to the illness, are really quite worried about when their vaccine might come. But just to say, you know, we are still above the EU average in terms of the vaccine rollout. I think we forget that when we hear the kind of the UK chatter on our media, is that we're still at 3% who are fully vaccinated. And where there is shortfall of supply, or where we are slightly off target, that's mostly about, you know, the companies. That's about AstraZeneca not supplying those vaccines. It's not, in fact, about a problem in the vaccination programme.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be fair to say that the government has shot itself in the foot when it comes to communications on vaccines. So I'm just wondering about Stephen Donnelly saying he's going to go to cohort four when we haven't really dealt with 400,000 in cohort three, whether that's like wise or whether it's realistic.
Well, whether it's realistic, it's too early to say. I think that will depend very much on the cooperation of GPs. Something that I have raised with him myself is that there would be a number of people in both of those cohorts who don't have a relationship with their GP and who will find it difficult to be referred for a vaccine, and that will be an ongoing issue, and that we need to expand the referral system to include perhaps consultants or outpatient clinics. So for people perhaps with a chronic condition, that might be a way for them to access the vaccine. I'm not particularly going to comment on the quality of communications by this government, because I tend to get myself in all sorts of trouble when I do that.
Grand. Well, let's move on then. One of the things which came out of the parliamentary party meetings, Micheál Lehane, particularly the Fine Gael one, was a critique by Leo Varadkar of a High Court action being taken by Patrick Costello, another Green Party TD, on the issue of CETA. What did he have to say, and what did you make of it?
Well, he doesn't like what's happening. He certainly doesn't like the approach being taken by Patrick Costello and going to the courts. And Leo Varadkar, as he sees it and as reported from that meeting, he thinks this is far worse than voting against the government when the proposal ultimately comes before the House, and then goes back, winds it all the way back to the formation of government, saying not everyone in Fine Gael really were too keen on this coalition, but they would never do something like this. They would never go to the government, never, ever do anything like this. And I suppose it does raise the question that at the end of all this now, what will the damage be as a result of this action? Because it's something that clearly has irked Fine Gael far more than it seems to have Fianna Fáil at this point. And I suppose that was evident too in the first attempt to try and get this ratified. You could sense the energy behind this coming from the Fine Gael side.
And on the issue of Deputy Costello, he was keen in a statement on Tuesday to RTÉ to say that this was a private action. So not taking it on behalf of his constituency, not taking it on behalf of the Green Party. He was going down as an individual. I'm sure, doesn't every individual have the right to go to court?
But come on. when it comes to private actions, Leo Varadkar, I'd say somewhat tongue-in-cheek, apparently saying at that meeting as well last night that he didn't know was it a case against him at this point, because he is the minister responsible for CETA. But I think, I mean, everyone knows this is a clear statement that's been made, and it's probably somewhat unexpected from someone within the government. I suppose it was thought that this would work its way through the committee system, perhaps more than one committee, and then ultimately go back onto the floor of the Dáil, and then the spotlight would shine on the Green Party TDs who've reservations about it. So it is a complicating factor, but even if it is all resolved at that level, it's what residual impact is there at the end of all this about the coalition?
The working relationship. Nessa, what did you make of Deputy Costello's legal action?
Well, of his legal action itself, I think that, you know, Deputy Costello, and look, there's no secret that I have considerable reservations about the investor state court aspect.
To put it mildly.
Of CETA,
to put
yes,
it mildly.
To put it mildly. But look, here's the thing. I think Deputy Costello and myself, you know, over the last few months have been really immersed in this. And we've talked a lot about why you would do this, like what's the benefit to the country. But what that action would answer is how you do this. Like, can we do this? And I think Deputy Costello's position is that there's a transfer of sovereignty here and a judicial power issue. And that he wasn't comfortable that that was something that we legally could do. And I think that the question is that if you are in any employment, if you are in any position of power, and you're being asked to do something that you suspect might be not legal, you need to speak up and you need to investigate that, and you need to do that in earnest and in a genuine way. And I think that that is what he is doing. I think, you know,
but could he have done it in a collegiate way? He could have picked up the phone and said, "Leo, how's it going? Just to tip you off here, taking a bit of legal action, and it might benefit us all if the constitutionality of the bill is decided upon by the courts."
Well, I suppose the timing of this and how we communicate to our government partners is above the pay grade of either myself or Deputy Costello.
So you go to the court?
Well, no, as in, you know, the timing of that, if he knew about the court action before it came out in the media is a kind of a separate issue that I wouldn't really know. But what I would say is that I think maybe we need to dial down the temperature of the whole debate. I mean, Fine Gael were sued or brought to the High Court by one of their own in 2016. It's not an unprecedented action. And I think
What was that one about?
I believe that was one of their own representatives was put out about not being on the ticket for a particular election and took them to court over it, and there was a hefty legal bill. So I think these things do happen, and I think we would all, instead of me coming in here and making comments about unprecedented behaviour by, you know, elected representatives, whether they're in government or not, I think we should all just dial down the temperature. This is a taken in good faith action. The other way of doing this is to ask the Attorney General, but the Attorney General will always only be an opinion, and really the only way to settle this is to ask a court. Mm.
But could you, I suppose one way of dialing it down was not to start the fire in the first place, by not going to it, not going to the High Court, or, you know, getting everyone on side before you did.
I suppose the question is, maybe did Deputy Costello feel he would get everybody on side, or if those questions were being answered, or they certainly have been asked over the last few months. I haven't seen those answers being forthcoming. So whether, you know, he could have waited for a while,
yeah,
remains to be seen.
Okay. Just can I ask you, because it sort of dovetails into it, is how are things going within the Green Party? Because as you say, both yourself and Deputy Costello at times have had, let's put it this way, a fraught relationship with the rest of the parliamentary party.
I mean, things are not always easy. I, in times of trouble, tend to do my work and concentrate on that. And I find that that's a very effective way of progressing. I think, you know, if we got the things that we agreed in the programme for government out of this 5 years of government, we'd be doing very well. And everybody is focused on that.
I suppose that touches on Eamon Ryan's letter to membership in last month, where he said there's an expectation that CETA should be ratified under the programme for government.
Well, of course, famously, we disagree on that,
yeah,
because that was not the way I remember it.
Okay. One thing which was also happening in the Dáil this week was the question of community banking. And this was something that you were advancing. To someone who didn't tune into the Oireachtas and isn't aware of it, how would you be able to sum it up in a couple of sentences?
Well, obviously, over the last few weeks, we've seen a real issue emerge in our banking sector. We've seen Ulster Bank, NatWest is the parent company there, withdraw from the Irish market. And we've seen Bank of Ireland announce closure of a huge amount of branches. And in fact, the debate in the Dáil last night was a real eye-opener for me, because almost every TD was able to stand up in the Dáil and say the name of a branch that was closing, or you know, a village or somewhere that was losing their banking services. So in 21 of the European countries that we, you know, share our territories with, there are something called a public bank or a community bank. And that is a profit-making but not profit-maximising bank. And most of them have a very regional outlook. So you wouldn't in Ireland necessarily set up one public bank. You might set up between 6 and 8 banks, for example. And they're not too dissimilar from something like, you know, what we see in the credit unions or on Post. They would be regionally focused. They would be putting money back into the community. They're particularly useful and important for small to medium enterprise, because for small to medium enterprise, all of the research tells us that having a relationship with like a local bank manager is really important. It kind of builds confidence and it builds information between you and the customer. And therefore, this thing of that we're seeing where Unpost would take over services for pillar banks, that won't really solve the problem of how small to medium enterprise can access credit in regional Ireland and rural Ireland.
I suppose one of the questions would be about, you know, another banking force which is dominated by the state. I mean, Unpost is 100% owned, PTSB 75% owned by the state, AIB 71%, Bank of Ireland 14%. I mean, the state is entrenched in the banking system already, and would it be helpful or advisable to deepen it with community banking?
No, I think we have to be really careful about the distinction here. When it comes to those banks that you've listed out, we are shareholders. We are state. You know, we own a part of a private bank. That is not the same as a community bank. That private bank still has, you know, a market share that is about maximizing profits for its shareholders. And it's not the role of the state, no matter what the share of the bank they hold, to walk in there and change the kind of fundamental structure of that bank. If we want something like community banking, we need to set it up from the beginning like that. And in 2019, then Minister Pascal Donoghue commissioned an Indicon report about whether we should have a public bank. And the Indicon report found that there was no need for one because there was no market failure and there was no lack of competition. But of course, we now have only really two operating pillar banks, and I would call that a market failure. So I think the time is right now to open that conversation again.
And where does that sit with, you know, where banking currently stands, at least the Irish banks? I mean, if you look at the revolution, I mean, what's happening there is that Irish banks are being left behind, and it could be that there aren't going to be banks into the future, because the services which are being offered by international banking is just faster, easier, and people like it.
You know, I think that's a really good point. And actually, Minister Donoghue made that point in the chamber last night, which is that the type, the method, the face of banking is changing, and a lot of it is moving online. It's not just that all the branches are closing down out of badness necessarily. But that also ignores an issue around financial inclusion. So yes, banking is changing, and yes, it's moving more online. But there is a whole cohort of people who are unable to make that transition. So whether they have bad broadband, they don't have access to the tech that they need, or they, for example, are older people, or they are people with disabilities who may struggle with some of those methods. And I guess on top of that, then it ignores the impact that a branch has on the local community in which it sits. So as I said before, for small business, for people who are trying to access kind of more complex services than just a deposit or just moving your money around, it's really important to have that branch right there and available to you.
Okay, Micheál Lehane, I'll bring you back in. You were sitting across some of that debate. In what sense did you get from it? I think I saw on Twitter you were saying that there was a general consensus. Was that putting too far on a general approach?
There was, but at the same time, there was no sense from the Minister for Finance that anything is going to change. He seemed to, at the end of it all, be a little bit exasperated that people would be calling for something like community banks, or that people would be calling or saying there was a possibility of other big banks entering the market, when he was saying what's really happened here is that you've had a withdrawal of a bank and that things are serious. And I didn't sense any appetite for any change. And then at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting, the only solution that was floated about what you could do with those buildings would be to offer others some other type of community service in those bank buildings that are going to close in towns and villages all over the country. This one is going to be interesting to watch because there was a similar debate, not on the same scale or perhaps not quite as loud when it came to rural post offices. And it did seem to have a lot of traction at one point. And then ultimately, when the closures came, it wasn't quite the catastrophe that some people had predicted. So I'm not saying that it will be the same, but it does have certain similarities about it at this point.
And that's just on another finance budgetary issue, because you cover that for the Green Party. On the issue of Davy, yesterday the Taoiseach told the Dáil that in his view the 4 million plus fine that was imposed on the brokering firm would change behaviour, and the Labour leader Alan Kelly was entirely unconvinced, saying this is one law for the rich, one law for the poor, in which the fine was going to be picked up by the company and no action taken against the individual brokers themselves.
I think that's the point, though, isn't it? Is that, you know, they're cushioned by Davy itself, and that there's no real recompense against any bad behaviour by particular individuals. So, I mean, even if we thought that the sum of money was enough, which honestly, I don't really think in that sphere of operation that sum of money is enough. I think the fact that they're cushioned by the organisation is problematic. So I wasn't particularly happy around it, no.
I thought it was remarkable over the course of that debate that the lack of kind of movement or signals from the finance minister on that, just from a purely political point of view, because the charges, they're fairly fierce. I mean, whether it comes to what happened at Davy or else AIB's acquisition of Goodbody and the fact that you will have bonuses now in a certain part of that bank, if not the whole bank. Those two things in a normal political cycle would be massive issues in the Dáil chamber, but somehow they didn't seem to garner the type of energy you'd expect. Another point too raised by Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty was a call on the minister to get the National Treasury Management Agency, which he said is managing taxpayers' money, to cut their ties with Davy now as a result of this. But again, no response from...
That's the NTMA's... issue,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, and the finance minister making the point that if you set up an independent regulator, well, then you take it away from politicians and you can't really be talking about it anymore. Again, in normal political cycle, that wouldn't wash, that wouldn't be acceptable, and that would be a dominant feature throughout today. But it's all about the pandemic and it's all about vaccines by and large. So all of the discourse lacks that little bit of energy.
Nasa Hourigan, just one more question for you. Just, I guess, because it comes up all the time, is your continued outlook on the Green Party. And I ask that just because some of the language you have used in interviews over the past year, this COVID year, have been quite strong. You talked about a hostile environment within the party, that it was incredibly uncomfortable continuing to be a Green Party member. And I guess, you know, when we hear of the just transition and all the rest, but sometimes people are looking at it, is it a ginger group trying to articulate within the party, or is it a splinter group which is about to leave? Where do you think things are going to be by the end of 2021?
I've ever so slightly given up trying to work out where I'm going to be in any kind of, I don't know if it's the pandemic or being a politician. I think first it's important to say that from a policy position, I'm very comfortable in the Greens. Like, you know, when it, like, we have advocated for things like public banking and UBI and, you know, carbon budgets and all these things for years. And I am absolutely entrenched in those positions and very happy to advocate for them. Obviously, there's been a huge amount of kind of, you know, turmoil in terms of like a team as a PP, as a parliamentary party. It hasn't been plain sailing, but I'm not inclined, yes, it is uncomfortable, but I'm not inclined to give too much oxygen to those kind of issues. As I said, I'd prefer just to focus on the work and do my work and advocate for my constituents and just keep going. And as I said, I have given up forecasting how everything is going to play out. I feel like if I continue in good faith and try and work hard for people, then it'll play out the way it's meant to.
Making predictions in a COVID world is probably a mad thing to do, but
it's a fool's game.
Thank you very much for joining us today. That's Nasa Hourigan, the Green Party TD for Dublin Central. Micheál, whatever about Nasa's outlook on it, how are Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil looking at this ongoing churning within the Green Party, and how is it going to affect their mojo?
Yeah, I think like you still are at that point, isn't it, where it's going to take a little while before normal governing returns and normal politics returns. So you would think when it comes to that period close to the summer, well, then those questions become relevant again. But they probably won't be that difficult to answer, because what you're going to be talking about is an economic recovery plan. You're going to be talking about an updated climate action plan, a national development plan, all kind of things that will be heavy on language, if not perhaps absolute commitments. But it could be a beneficial enough space for the government to kind of, I hate using that word reset, but I just can't think of another one.
Start again.
but you know, that they will be able to put the language, a lot of the language that's in the programme for government already, reuse it and keep the Green Party happy as you go into the summer.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, Micheál Martin intends to be there till the very last moment of his Taoiseach. And after that, Fine Gael has its own leader, Leo Varadkar, heading back into the department of the Taoiseach. And that should be enough. Wouldn't one think, I know there's so much sort of uncertainty, that should be enough, particularly when it's clear that the vast majority of the Green Party is absolutely intent on trying to implement everything that it's possible to implement now that they've made the jump into government.
Yeah, I would think so, because like, if you get to June and you have a debate about opening up the economy, you have an economic plan, and then you're coming into the summer recess, and then it's probably not in the budget in October where you begin to talk about, in a meaningful way, getting all that money back and finding ways of paying it back. That's probably for the one after that, where Micheál Martin, if things continue in a certain way, is still there and but is about to finish up, and you're going to have that swap over, you would think, with the finance minister and the public expenditure minister as well. So for all those reasons, there is this bizarre sense of continuity in play, and a key part of it is that each way bet that Fine Gael have to get back into the office of Taoiseach.
Just on the vaccine thing, we started off on it, but it just did seem to be this week that temperatures were beginning to rise. Clearly, individual TDs were hearing from GP practices. You had at the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party, you had the former agriculture minister, Dara Cleary, beating a drum on this. It just seems
the agriculture minister, yeah.
Former.
He used to be, yeah.
No. But you had that sense that there was a concern within the backbenchers of government that if things are messing up now, it could go really wrong in a couple of months' time when truckloads of the stuff are rolling into our ports.
Yeah, and I mean, they always come back to that word communication, but communication is really when something has gone wrong at a more deeper level. And government admitting today, well, it's not just supply. There were problems in getting the vaccine to dozens of GPs as well. They say in the overall context, the number of GP practices is not huge, but huge if you were one of the people affected by it, if you were in your 80s or your 90s and you got a call that they were cancelled just before it. So it was a significant thing, and government were slow enough to say that there was a problem beyond supply. But they have done it today. I think across the parties, while you do see the political divide there and the different charges being made, at the same time, there does seem to be a sense that this needs to be sorted now, and it needs to become more transparent to maintain confidence in it. And that's for a few reasons, for the programme itself, but also in that sense of trying to maintain calm and stability for that period, given that restrictions are going to be pretty much there until the beginning of May, at
least.
Because
there will be no forgiveness if the wheels come off the bus of this vaccine programme.
No, I mean, this is the ultimate test, and if anything were to go, and there wasn't an expectation really that something could go wrong in the delivery. I mean, the big fear and the big charge being made by the opposition was always about the international travel element, that's the thing that could come and topple it.
Just as we draw to a close, I saw a tweet from Christopher O'Sullivan, the Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South West, where he was stirring it up in relation to the Wild Atlantic Way, and he'd seen a proposal that it should start in Killarney. And he was saying, no, it should start in Kinsale.
Yeah, what Cork Kerry stuff. You have to admire Killarney, though. They're never, since the 1800s now, they've been finding a way to become the top tourist destination. What's interesting about Killarney, I was looking back at the bid, it's relevant, the Rugby World Cup bid, when Killarney was trying to become one of the host areas. And it was seen that it wasn't quite as big a player as it might have thought itself when it came to that particular bid for the Rugby World Cup that time. And of course, that's relevant now, given that the country's on its way to another bid for a World Cup in 2030.
Well, I remember Micheál Martin was blowing kisses across the Doyle to the Healy Ray brothers, talking about the merits and intelligence of people from Kerry and all the rest of it. So I'm just wondering if it works the other way. As a Kerry man, one last question. Would you wear Michael Collins' wolf head blue slippers if they were bought out in production? Did you see them there 2 weeks ago? Back out of the
I don't
the old museum.
I don't really see any circumstances where Kerry people can support Cork people.
On that note, we shall end this edition of Your Politics podcast from RTÉ News. I'd like to thank Nasa Hourigan, the Green TD, for joining us. Micheál Lehane, who's clearly embittered, but will be back next week as well. Until the next time, take care.